Welcome to a new episode of Panel by Panel, the show that dissects a single comic book panel from the last 85 years of comics history each episode. I'm Siskoid, and our panelist today is Daniel Put Ouellette. Welcome to the show, Put.
Thank you for having me, and hello, everyone.
This was sort of an emergency podcasting session. That's why it's going to be a short episode, a panel by panel always being pretty short. But on my schedule, we Put and I were supposed to be talking about a role-playing product or two on Let's Roll, Fire and Water's role-playing game podcast. Except we had a third person in there who had to bow out at the last second. We rescheduled, but we didn't want to waste a slot. And so here we are to talk. This is the quickest I've ever prepared a podcast.
Well, it is a podcast that requires a lot of improvisation, since the guest doesn't really get to prepare what he's going to say because we don't know the panel ahead of advance, so it kind of works out.
Well, in your case, that's true. In reality, I usually send the panel a few days before.
Oh, okay.
So they can prepare their thoughts. Or in this case, that's not going to happen. So we're really off the cuff here. I essentially rolled up this panel minutes ago, sent it to Put, and barely wrote anything down as far as notes go, and we're just gonna go for it. So let's do it. The randomized series of choices using my database of available comic book materials, either physical or digital, prior to the recording. We rolled up a year, a month, a comic on the stands that month, a page, and finally a panel. In this case, we rolled the year 2014, the month of December. Among all the comics out that month, the revolving finger falls on Punks the Comic number 3 by writer Joshua Hale Fialkov and artist Cody Chamberlain. It's going to be page 13 of 28 and panel 2 of 3, which you'll find in the show notes at fireandwaterpodcast.com, along with other context elements. Punks the Comic. So people may not know what it is. It's kind of a weird project.
Correct.
It certainly belongs in my collection. It's the kind of stuff I have in my collection that I happily got. I'm interested. It's a collage comic. So as we'll describe it, etc. But first, the fact that it's collage, not drawn or painted. Are you surprised?
I'm very surprised, because when you told me 10 minutes ago that we'd be doing this, and you explained that I would be getting a comic panel and I would have to overanalyze it, I was like, uh-oh, I know nothing about superheroes, nothing about people who draw superhero comics. I'm going to be awful at this. But this is not at all drawn, nor a superhero comic, so I am incredibly relieved.
Oh, okay. that's a good thing. Does that speak to you, this style, like looking at it now?
Yeah, I think it's a lot of fun, actually.
Good. I mean, I'm not a very good artist in terms of drawing. It's very cartoony, and I've done a lot of comic strips for, you know, school newspapers, that kind of stuff. So I know that I'm not good. Through practice, I know I'm not good. But At one point, I was very interested in doing mini comics. So they're abominably drawn, obviously, but I had a series, I think I came out with like maybe 4 or 5 issues of it, called Dada. And the whole point was I was into Dada at university. Probably the Brotherhood of Dada in Doom Patrol sent me in that vortex of weird stuff in the library. I got interested in Dada, which is basically the poetry of meaninglessness. It's an exquisite corpse stuff.
I think I've seen these comics. I remember
you have.
I remember you talking about them. I think that's where I learned what Dada was as a philosophy. And I remember seeing a few of these, although I could not tell you what they were because, well, there's not much logic to it, so it's hard to form a memory of it, but yeah.
Right, exactly. Like, I'll put some of these images from this, since I have a lot more time on the editing end of this. I'll just ferret out these issues and maybe scan a few things and put them on the website along with this panel to show how I was doing it. Mine was very much meaningless. Like, this is, obviously, we're just going to look at one panel, which is meaningless in itself because it's out of context. But even in context, my comics meant nothing. Everything was picked out of a basket, essentially, images and words, and then pasted as it went. And it creates a meaning, because that's what I think is interesting about doing something like this, is that the human brain will always put a meaning on it, even though there isn't one, even though it was all through chance. And so the comics were usually, I would go to the library, I'd decide on a title, and the title was itself like two words mixed together that didn't make any sense. I looked at books that had images, illustrations of those two things, and then I would photocopy the stuff. And so you'd end up with, like, there's one that's fish and shoes, and it's like diagrams of shoes and diagrams of fish and whatever other elements.
So although there was not necessarily a sense to it, there was definitely a theme.
A theme, yeah. So I worked from a theme. One of the ones that I'm going to put on the website was kind of based on Secret Wars, the comic book. So that's going to be of interest to our listeners. Basically, I sort of traced some of the panels from Secret Wars, the Marvel comic, but didn't put in any details, so you can't... It's obviously a superhero comic where people are fighting, etc. You're not sure who the characters are, and then there's a bunch of stuff pasted over them. And then all the words, instead of coming from these whatever books that were in the selection, and the sort of the Boolean research that I did for the other ones, the words were all cut out from, you know, comic book catalogs, previews, and such. So it's got that verbiage, and yet, you know, it's still nonsense, right? But also, with that one, I wanted to show all those big crossover events with superheroes in it, it's completely meaningless to someone who doesn't know what's going on, who these characters are. So I wanted to recreate that even for a comic book reader. Anyway, I'll put some of these images, so I'll show my work. So let's talk about this one from Punks, the comic number 3.
Sure.
Can you describe it for our viewers who may not be looking at the image right now?
Okay, so... collage art, you got to think layers. So we got layers here. And I don't mean layers of meaning. I literally mean layers of collage. So in the background, it's made with a photograph from what might have been an old journal or book, because the page is obviously tinted like that yellow brownish color that paper gets when it's really old. So that's the background. And it's a crowd of people, a public, that are there to see what seems like some kind of hearing, like a government hearing of some kind. And then in front of that, in the foreground, we have a desk with the typical collection of microphones pointing towards the people sitting at the desk. And there's one old white guy sitting with white hair and a white beard sitting at the desk, having a bit of a smile on him. And then standing next to him is somebody who's maybe a little more hip, seeing as how he's wearing tight jeans with a sports jacket and a tie. It's very, I don't know, like David Duchovny-like as a style. And he has his hand out, and his left hand is on his hip, and he's very clearly no longer happy to be here. And it might have something to do with his head being transformed into the head of a bulldog for some reason. So it's the only character in the whole panel that doesn't have a human head. He has the head of a bulldog, and he's just saying, all right, I'm out. This is super dumb, which hopefully will not be what everybody will be saying from this episode.
It's fun to be dumb. Did you not recognize the human man?
No. So this is one thing. Like, I saw the panel and I was like, I feel like there's a bunch of people here that I should know who they are, but I don't. Especially, and the first reason why I thought the human man should be recognizable. Oh, hang on. Maybe it's coming to me. Anyways, his head is enlarged compared to his body, which is not the case for anybody else on the scene. So I feel like this kind of brings the idea of a parody of a real human being to me. But is that Sean Connery?
It is Sean Connery.
Okay. Yeah.
It's older Sean Connery. I mean, he looks like he's the one on trial or at the hearing. Uh-huh. You know, he's at the microphone. But he's a character in this. I'm not saying he's Sean Connery in the story. I don't know. We don't know that.
I feel like he has a very Sean Connery type smile to where like he just said something that pissed off everybody else, but he's really happy about what he said. And he's like, haha, gotcha. That's kind of like the face that I'm seeing from him.
And sort of his attorney has decided, no, right. Like you're digging your own grave. I'm out.
Yeah.
And I don't recognize the hearing in the back or anything. You know, none of the other elements tell me anything. I don't know what's going on.
It looks like a school cafeteria or something.
Because in the background,
it looks like maybe there's a stage or I don't know.
Yeah. One of the things is that you talked about layers, which is interesting because there's layers of colors, which may or may not be part of the original image or, you know, like they may have enhanced this afterwards.
Yeah.
Just the way that it's cut, like the panel itself has a curve to it.
Right.
Like a beige curve, and then there's the sepia tone as another curve in there. And obviously, the black and white, which was kind of a photocopy or like an old photograph in a book. Mm-hmm. And then, like, that's that color. And then there's like a greenish tinge to the desk. And that tinge goes right over one of the guys. Like, I don't know, there's like a person, maybe a journalist, or there's someone by
cameraman,
a cameraman. I mean, he's taking a picture, and he's partly in this grayish green and partly in the sepia tone. So there may be like a color wash on there.
I also feel like the cameraman has a more modern haircut than everybody else in this. And I'm wondering if there's a reason for that.
Like longer on top and then real fades on the side?
My idea was that maybe this is the artist inserting himself into his art. That was the first idea I got. Yeah. One other detail that I like here is that you can see the scotch tape that was used for the collage.
I love that. Mm-hmm. That's probably my favorite bit is that you see the scotch tape. Because you don't see it everywhere. Like, not everything. Everything must have been pasted up.
And you know what? Isn't Sean Connery a Scotsman?
Oh.
But he's being represented by a British bulldog. So this is a political commentary panel. This is what this is. This is the British being like, I'm done with you Scots.
Very interesting take.
Does the context of 2014 inform us on anything in that?
I don't know.
I don't know either.
I mean, there's a possibility there was like another referendum for independence. Those have been going on in Scotland for a while. It's probably not, because I just before this recording, I like, can I at least look at information on punks on Wikipedia or something? No, there's no, it doesn't have its own entry.
Wow, that's so punk.
It's very punk. Yeah. And so the only thing I found is like, and on the quick Googling was a review of Punks number one. Okay. So, I mean, I've read this series. It's not like but it was back in the day, you know, right? I haven't seen this in 10 years. Go to that review, and the person is essentially saying, like, he finds like the art really remarkable, that this isn't easy to do, to stage a comic, you know, just using these pictures and photocopies to tell some sort of story with them. At the writer's direction, I have no idea how they wrote this. It's like, how did they write this? Like, there's a writer and an artist.
Right.
So there has to be a collaboration. Mm-hmm. So, you know, in what order did this happen? You know, are you directed to, here are the characters. So, you know, find a bulldog, find a Sean Connery, there's a character who's just like a fist, like his head is a fist.
Right, because my guess would be that traditional comics, like they're writing most of the time comes first, and then the artist kind of like visualizes what has been written. But like with a collage, that must indeed be a lot harder, and they might even want to work in the opposite direction most.
Right. Maybe they chatted about what could happen, a little bit like, you know, Stan Lee and Jack Kirby kind of thing back in the 60s. Let's just chat about what could be. The artist goes and does a thing, puts the dialogue on, tries to make sense of this story, despite there not being much. So that's basically what the review was saying, is like, what is this about? I don't think it's about anything, was their conclusion. But I can assure you that there is a story being told. It's not like every panel is a completely non sequitur to the last one. Like, this hearing goes on for pages. Lincoln is the judge. You know, so there's something. There's very much a story being told, and when people speak, they're responding to what was spoken before. You know, it's not a complete nonsense.
Wait, Lincoln is the judge?
Yeah, I think Abe Lincoln is one of the main characters.
Well, now I really want it to be a political story.
Yeah. I mean, it's Abe Lincoln, a fist, Mr. Fist or something, and then just maybe I think the bulldog is the other one? I don't know, but there's like their roommates.
Okay.
And then stuff happens. But it is kind of like this nonsense thing. So maybe the art comes first, and then Fialkov has to
make some sense of it.
Yeah, I mean, he's come on my blog before. I've spoken to him on Twitter or something in the past. He's pretty approachable as far as comics creators go. So maybe he'll spot this and want to explain it, or maybe not. I think maybe like the charm of punks is that it cannot be explained and should not be explained.
Yeah, I kind of agree with you. I think I don't want an explanation. This is the kind of art that I want to be able to make my own explanation for. Okay. I think this is the kind of art that I appreciate more when I can, me, myself, and I interpret it.
Some interesting bits about the bulldog, I think, when I'm looking at him. First of all, he's probably in an image with other things, because he seems to be, you know, there's like a dent in his head.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe they cut out something like another dog's tail or somebody's finger or, you know, something in the picture is not present. So it just creates like a little dent. So that's an interesting, like when you're trying to think, when they were making this, what did they have to do? The other thing is, I don't think his tie
is
real.
Yeah, the tie and the shirt, I think, are both like not part of the sport jacket image.
Right. They were cut out from a black, you know, black paper, white paper to make this work. Yeah, yeah, definitely. And Sean Connery, at first I thought, like, why does he have this weird greenish cuff on his, but it's a glass of water or something.
Yeah.
The collage sometimes makes it kind of weird. What's happened? What am I looking at? And then you have to see through those layers.
I also wonder why the choice of like whiting out his hand.
Are they whited out, or is the original image, you know, too bright on that particular element? Basically, the photocopy or the newspaper character, and it's just like the hands are super white. It is striking. They're too white.
It was, I think, a deliberate choice. I'm not really sure why it would have happened, but I feel like that doesn't happen by accident. Not when everything else on the panel seems pretty coherent. Like the hands and the fake cup are pretty much the only thing that seem to not fit with the reality of the picture.
So I don't know what's going on there. Another bit that perhaps shows us how this was made is the sort of white outline around the bulldog, because it's got a...
They're scissor cuts for sure.
Right. You can see, like, the hand especially. So it feels like maybe, and it depends how they did the colors, but it kind of looks almost like not only was the bulldog pasted on, but there was a hole cut out just for him. Like, he would go exactly on top of that. Like, that hand was already a hole, and he would, like, the bulldog would go inside the hole.
Oh, yeah. And if you look next to his butt on the left, you can see the background image is white there.
Oh, yeah.
So, like, the background image would have, like, that sepia tone would have been added on, I think, right?
Right. So, it's either added on digitally, or, you know, it's like a transparency. And you cut that out, and then, you know, you put the transparency on top of where you want it to be. That could be, that because it's still like very sharp kind of angles. You could do this with Photoshop or whatever. You know, like do your collage, bring it into the computer, add the colors.
Yeah.
And have the colors be the same scissor imprecision that you would bring to the image if you were doing it yourself. Because it's not like a brush. It's not a color that is applied except maybe in the computer. And of course, now, you know, comic books are made in computers. We don't know, but maybe even the collage element was all made in computer as well, without any scissors. But I like the scissory feel, though.
There's also a time traveler in this image.
Is there?
Well, and I don't mean the camera guy, but like, you know how in movies, whenever it's a time travel movie and like they reveal that somebody's a time traveler by showing that he's in old pictures that he could not possibly have been there for.
Right.
You know, like a character now would show up in a picture from the 1700s. Well, in those pictures, the time traveler is always looking at the camera when nobody else is for some reason. And in this picture, it's the guy all the way at the right.
Okay.
He kind of looks like a serial killer time traveler. He's just looking directly at the camera, kind of like to let us know, hey, like he's breaking the fourth wall. It's kind of like he's saying, I'm not supposed to be here, and I know that you, the viewer, are not either.
Yeah, Jeffrey Dahmer, time traveling. Yeah, true. I thought you were going to say at the opposite end, there's a guy with a mustache and longer hair who kind of looks like a more of a 70s kind of guy, whereas everybody else maybe is like a 50s kind of hearing. It's just that he's cut. You can see he's cut out or cut in. The lines are very, very strict around him. So I'm wondering if, like, the background, maybe this is what's actually happening, is that the background with the sort of jury element, that's the real background. And then some of these people were added, especially the woman and the 70s man who are just behind the bulldog.
Well, you can see some cut lines around them, whereas you don't see that around the other members of the public. Yeah.
So probably there's like a hole there. It needs a little something, more crowd. And those people were added from a completely different picture and potentially a completely different era. And I'm also wondering what there's a sort of signature in here, an accidental signature at the top of, you know, above the crowd, the black space, which is the back wall, goes into, and this is either because it was cut that way or that's actually the room, but it goes into an angle, like a little roof. I don't know, there's sort of a scratched in, and this could be like something scratched into the picture originally, but there's sort of the letters QM, and I don't know what that is, or it's like a light fixture and just, you know, the photocopy of it made it look like this. We don't know. Sometimes pictures were identified in some way, some marking. This is maybe like a, you know, a picture from the government and there's something there. I don't know.
It's the Queen Mother overlooking the independence hearing.
I love that you somehow found a way to make this about Scottish independence.
Yep.
A real political thing.
It's not punk if it's not political, Mike.
And punk started, you know, like Sex Pistols, etc. The punk movement started in Britain. Yeah, totally. I mean, I love that you found a way to do this within the few minutes that we had to prepare at all. But also that neither of us is a British person, and we don't know what the hell we're talking about here. So if you're British and listening to this,
we apologize.
If you're Scottish and you're listening to this, fight the power. Fight the power.
Speaking of time traveling, the lawyer's pants are clearly from the year 2000.
Oh, yeah. That's those are the jeans?
Yeah. Those are much more recent than the rest of the fashion in everywhere in this pic.
Right. We didn't talk about the dialogue, except in the description. All right, I'm out. This is super dumb. I guess it goes with your political message.
Absolutely.
It's certainly fine. Let me just draw us back. I'll put the entire page on the website just to say that, like, the slim context that you might have here, essentially, there's like three panels. This one is a very horizontal middle panel. The first panel is still at the trial, and a bunch of toothbrushes, well, people with toothbrush heads, come in with guns, sniper rifles, which is, that's where the bulldog says, I'm out, this is super dumb. And then the three amigos of this series, the other one's a skull. So there's a skull, Lincoln, and a fist, and they all say seconded.
Okay. Well, immediately toothbrushes, and I apologize once again for being so offensive, but what are British known for? Bad teeth. So clearly, that's why there are toothbrushes. It just brings another argument forward to what I was saying about what this is all about.
To me, this proves what I was saying earlier about my Dada comic.
Uh-huh.
We will always, the human brain, some of our brains are more diseased than others. I'm sorry to tell you this. We'll find a meaning in something that is supposed to be random, something that is supposed to be nonsense. We will always try to make sense of it. And somehow, and this is completely out of context with the rest of the comic, which has its own sense, probably, if you'd read the whole thing. But not having read the whole thing, this is the sense that you bring to this one scene, creating a story and a political message. There's messaging in this one panel, and it all seems to make sense.
Well, our brains want to group stuff together, right?
Right. Well, I know. You studied psychology, among other things.
If this had been one of your Dada panels,
right,
what would have been the title? What are the two concepts?
It's hard to say because it was like a Boolean search, and so you would get some like really random things in there that just seemed to fall within the theme that I wrote down on the computer. And this is back in the 90s, so you can imagine. But probably there would have been some sort of hearing stuff, McCarthyism, maybe. You know, there's obviously a court thing, and then there you have to have a dog in there. But it may be based on like personalities. And you've got Connery, you got a bulldog who may well be, you know, like a famous dog, or it could be something like that, or a dog in a movie. And the movie came up in the research because of the title or something. But it's hard to say based on this. There are too few elements to really make that determination. I mean, once you get toothbrushes in, I don't know what's happening. Well, I think we went around the subject.
And then some.
Yeah. So thank you, Put. I guess you'll return to the podcastosphere hopefully next month for that episode of Let's Roll. We were planning. I'll try to make it happen. I'll let you go back to the margins. We'll listen to a short promo. I'll come back with listener feedback on our previous episode. Thanks again.
You're welcome. It was fun.
Siskoid watches a lot of movies. Like, a lot. So now he has his own movie podcast. Or several. Siskoid Cinema is your one-stop umbrella for a variety of shows like Fade In, exploring the first films of famous actors and directors.
This is a joke, right?
On Borrowed Time, discussing all your favorite time travel movies.
Whoa, this is heavy.
Why are things so heavy in the future? Is there a problem with the Earth's gravitational pull?
And No Escape from Kurt Russell, a dissection of the man, the mystique, and the movies.
There goes a perfectly good bumper sticker.
And more. Siskoid Cinema, a proud member of the Fire and Water Podcast Network. And now, your feedback on our previous episode, which featured Ian Fletcher and a panel from Tintin in Tibet, comment by comment. Start with Matt Ev. Fabulous episode, he says. Then he uses Kingpin voice. I won't do it. When I was a boy, end of Kingpin voice, one had to make a choice between Asterix and Tintin. I opted for the Gauls. So I haven't read a lot of Tintin, but your discussion was absolutely fascinating and made me want to address my youthful and entirely arbitrary binary attitude to comics from Francophone nations. Well, they're both good for different reasons, Matt. And I think it's okay to prefer one over the other. I think I probably preferred Asterix myself, to be honest, as a kid. They were just like funnier stories, maybe. So I started on Tintin, and then as my sense of humor grew, I fell more into like the more humorous stories. Anyway, Captain Entropy says, I have the same relationship with Tintin that I do with cruise lines. I'm aware Tintin exists, and I've heard great things from people whose opinion I respect, but I have not partaken in its goodness. I'll have to rectify that. Reading Tintin, I mean, I can probably go my whole life without cruising. Regardless, it was a lot of fun listening to you two discuss it. Thank you, Captain. Paul Keane finally says, great episode as always. I agree with the Captain. I have never read Tintin either and would like to rectify that. Do you recommend just starting with Volume 1, apparently called Tintin in America? Okay, first of all, that's Volume 2. You know, so I guess they probably, when you looked it up, they took off the unfortunately racist Tintin in the Congo, probably out of circulation. I know they did it in the UK, so that's probably what's happening there, and that's fine. And I don't love In America either. I think Hergé was still doing anthologies then. So Tintin in the Congo, Tintin in America, and the Volume 0, if you will, Tintin in the Land of the Soviets, or whatever it's called in English. There's a lot of little things happen, gag pages, you know, it's more of a picaresque, that there's not like a strong story there. So I would honestly, I would start with The Cigars of the Pharaoh, or whatever you call it. It introduces one of the major villains, and the light continuity of the books really starts here. So you might see characters return and locations return from that point. It was redrawn, so it looks really gorgeous. The next one over, The Blue Lotus, wasn't redrawn, so there you can tell the difference. It's a little more primitive in terms of the art, but still, it's such like a dense story. I think The Blue Lotus is also a good one. But Cigars of the Pharaoh has an Indiana Jones feel. You go to Egypt, you go into tombs, there are a lot of pulp feel to the villain, etc. So that's where I would start. All right, before we go, we have to mention the Fire and Water Podcast Network Patreon page at patreon.com/FW Podcast. If you like our content, please think about making a one-time or a monthly donation to help host all of these podcasts. And as ever, a reminder that if you'd like to do one of these short podcasts, drop me a line and we'll arrange it. You'll be handed a comic book panel randomly and we'll put it up for discussion. My thanks again to my guest, Daniel Ouellette, and until we refill that seat, the panel is open.